Welcome to Eastlake Church. We say this is a church for everyone because we mean it. I'm Robin, I'm the lead pastor. And we're talking about skills today. We're in a series about the Bible. And I don't know if you know, but in the Bible, God has made 7,000 promises to help us live our life. And today we're going to talk about some of those promises in the context of dads. Now, if you're a dad today, just understand this is not whip dad into shape day. This is to talk to dads and everybody about promises that God has made to help us live their life in our lives and help live people around us. Promises are so different, the power of God promises. So grab your note sheet and let's get started. The big idea, God has promised to help you develop your skills. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you with my loving eye upon you. There's a huge difference between willpower and God power. Now, today we're talking about God power, promises from God, way different than willpower. When I got out of high school, I went up to Alaska for a season. I worked on a fishing boat up there. And part of what you had to do was you had to watch the automatic pilot of the boat. So when everybody else was sleeping, you'd take a shift and you would go up there. And I'd never been on a boat this size before. And I was amazed at how strong this automatic pilot was. We'd get into some pretty rough water and high seas. And we'd knock this boat around and, you know, move it way off course. But the automatic pilot was always strong enough to bring it right back where it was. I mean, you could muscle, if you grab the steering, you could muscle it off and get it going a different direction. But as soon as you let go, the boat would go right back. And I thought, you know, that's a lot what it seems like when you use willpower to make changes. I mean, when the strength runs out, when you can't hold it anymore, everything just goes right back. And we're talking about a different type of power today. It's not willpower. It's God power. It's the promises of God. Okay? So, number one in your note sheet, let's look at the very first promise. Surrender your struggle. Now, I bought some little word pictures today to give examples of everything, and I got this white flag today, surrender your struggle. That's a skill that God helps us have. Several hundred years ago, there was this group of Christ followers called the Huguenots. They lived in France, in the north part of France, and the king of France didn't want them to serve God the way they were serving God. They wanted them to serve him. And so these Huguenots, you know, they weren't about to do that. So they fled up into the mountains and they had this fortress. They had this big high wall around it and they were going to serve God the way we want to serve God. And the king, he's not standing for it. He sends the best general in his army out to get these guys and you're going to serve me, you're the king. And so the general gets there and he sees these high walls. He doesn't really want to do it. I mean, who wants to fight over religion and how we live our faith? And so he doesn't really want to, like, you know, have war against these people. So he decides he's going to offer them terms of surrender. So he grabs a spear and he writes out, and he writes a note on it, and he said, if you will surrender and serve the king, we'll let everyone live. And he throws the spear over this wall, and the Huguenots get it, and they look at it, and they think, oh. And so they write a note back onto it, and 5 minutes go by, and this spear comes flying back over, and the general picks it up, and he looks at it, and it says, we have a king. We won't surrender. And I thought, you know, in all of us, there's this sort of reluctance. It's like the Huguenots have it right, because when I surrender, I feel like I've been defeated by an enemy. And yet when it comes to God, he's not your enemy. And you're not surrendering to an enemy. I just jot this in your notes. Surrender is not admitting defeat. It's asking for a victory. You can take it way too far when it comes to God and say, I don't want to surrender. I don't want to feel like I'm a loser, and who does? But with God, when you surrender a part of your life, it's entirely different. What area of your life isn't submitted to him? Maybe you're a Christ follower, but you know there's something you're holding back, or maybe you're still kind of looking out towards God, wondering what area. Maybe it's a relationship that you have, and you just can't wave the white flag in that. You know it's a difficult conversation you have. You know you should go and ask someone to forgive you. You know that you should forgive someone, but in that relationship, you just have not surrendered that relationship to God, and so you're still bitter, you're still angry, you're still defensive, because you just can't surrender that to God. Maybe it's your finances. It's like everything else is okay, God, but don't touch my wallet. That's off limits to you. That's my debit card, not your debit card, God. And so you still struggle. Every month it's up to you to pay the bills, and every month it's your responsibility to make sure ends meet. You carry the whole weight of the world on your shoulders financially. You've never been able to just relax and have the peace of knowing you have a provider, because when it comes to your finances, you can't wave the white flag. Here's a touchy one. Maybe it's your sex life. You're a single person, you're not with someone, the little voice inside, maybe it's God says, don't do all that stuff again, but no, I can't surrender that to God. Or even married people. You know, it's like, that's my area of my life that I hold aside. And so the guilt and the shame and all of it's still there because I can't surrender that area to God. Or maybe it's your whole life. We always have lots of people that come into our services and they're kind of checking out God and Christianity, and or you're a Christ follower. And there's a part of your life you know you're not quite all in. The reason we do baptisms the way we do it at East Lakes, we don't have a lot of classes or a bunch of requirements that you have to go through, because we know at some point when someone decides, I want to go all in and give them a life. See, we bring these bags here that have everything you need. This is not a baptism bag. This is a surrender bag. We have the towel and the shirt and the shorts in there. So, and I hope you're processing even today going, am I surrendered to God? Because baptism is when you surrender. You just say, I want to surrender everything to you, God. So the white flag. Now, number two in your notes, you write this in, stick to it. And I have this cool little miniature thing of duct tape. Little thing of duct tape here for stick to it. This last Friday, my wife and I celebrated 33 years of marriage. Woo! So 33 years we've been married. Stick to it. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we'll reap a harvest if we don't give up. I prepared this little thing, surprised my wife on our anniversary dinner. Robin and Clarice, 33 years, 12,045 days, 289,000 hours, and I read it, and Clarice just shook her head, and I feel every one of them. I could see she's like... I thought it'd be cool on our anniversary. I listed seven blanks here. You could just kind of write a sentence. And I thought it'd be cool for the first five one to write about the other person and say, since we've been married, these are the five areas I've seen you really grow in and get better in. And then two of them, because I'm married to you, here's the two areas that I'm better in. I'm just going to read mine to you about my wife. You're consistently forgiving. And boy, have I needed it in our marriage, 33 years. Number two, you try to stay out of fights. I don't know why I wrote that one. Here's what I've noticed about my wife over the years is that she's learned how to figure out not to argue as much. And she can kind of see an argument coming. We don't argue nearly as much as we did when we first got married. Number three, you're patient with my work life. So remember now, we started this church, we're all bivocational, so we have jobs that we work at 40 or 50 hours a week. But our real heart is to pastor the church, and so it's a lot of scheduling and work stuff. My wife's very understanding. And number four, you're beautiful. Now all the girls go, oh, that's nice, you're beautiful. My wife's in here, and that was pretty weak. Let's try it again on three. One, two, three. Oh, yeah, that's good, okay. You keep striving for better and bigger goals. And here's the two that I wrote about me. Stick to it, and that's two. But I'm a family man now. If you come from a broken home like I did, you come from alcohol, drug abuse, or divorce, or anything like that, and the only family you saw was on TV, your family was all jacked up, you would know what I mean when you say, I'm a family man now. And then number seven, I make a consistent income. When I was a young man, I would see people with houses and cars and a whole life, and I would always say to myself, I'm never going to get anything like that. But now I actually have a job and a paycheck, and I go to work every day. Stick-to-itiveness. Staying with it. Now remember, we're not talking about willpower, we're talking about God power. And you know how come we know we can stick with it? It's because God sticks with us. There's a story about a little village where just everybody went to the same church and everybody knew each other. But there was this one guy in this little village that wouldn't go to church. They didn't even know if he believed in God. He was just real ornery and obstinate. He wouldn't hang out with anybody else. And And there was one night it's raining and storming out and it's kind of late, and he gets caught in this rain trying to get over to where he lives, and it's still a long walk, it's late at night. So he knocks on this one house, and the guy that lives there, he's Mr. Pius, he goes to church all the time, he keeps all the rules, you know, and he opens the door and he sees this guy. He looks out and he sees him, and he looks, he goes, "Hey, I know who you are. What do you want?" He said, I'm an old man, he's like in his 80s. So I'm traveling, I'm trapped in the rain, I'm cold, and would it be possible for me to stay here just tonight? And the pious man looks at him and says, You don't even go to church. He goes, "We don't even know if you believe in God. You're not nice to people. I would never let you in my house," and slams the door. He looks in the window, and there's the old man going off along into the rain. And that's when, as the story goes, God spoke to him and say, "But I brought him to your house." And the man looks up and says, "Lord, I wouldn't have the patience to spend one night with him." And the Lord said, "I've had the patience to spend over 80 years with him." And the story ends with the man running out and getting the old man and bringing him into his home, because he finally caught God's heart that never gives up. Where do you feel like in your life God's patience has run out for you? He's done in that area. Who have you run out of patience with? Don't try willpower. Be willing to go to God, the one that never runs out of patience, and say, "Would you give me your heart and power?" That's number two. Number three, write in, keep your sense of humor. A cheerful heart is good medicine. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. Now, I don't know where we got the idea that church has to be boring and God is so serious, he's just waiting to catch us, do things wrong, and that, you know, there's no room for a sense of humor. Life will suck the laughter right out of you if you're not careful. You won't laugh at anything. Everything will be so serious. You'll be so cynical. Do you know that even God laughs? Someone said, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him about your future plans. He'll chuckle. It says the Creator laughs. Now, I want to show you a picture. He created everything. I want to show you a picture. Look at this monkey. Look at that monkey. Now, what kind of a God would... You'd have to have a sense of humor to create this monkey. His privates are all out in the open, and they're glowing. I mean, that's not even fair. You know the angels. You know when God created this monkey, the angels were laughing like, "Ha, ha, look what God did. That's a..." It's okay to laugh and have fun and have a sense of humor. It's a skill. When I was you can take it down now. People are going to puke soon. When I was a young... Oh, and I have this... look at what I brought today. This is cool. I brought a whoopee cushion. Whoopee cushion. Just something to have fun with. Whoopee cushion. When I was a young Christian, I really admired the pastor of our church. He was an older man. And there was this wedding that was going on. He was officiating the wedding. And it was one of his friends that was getting married for the second time, been divorced, getting married for the second time. So it's beautiful weddings. Everybody's there and they're dressed. And, you know, here comes the bride all the way down, just looking beautiful. And the pastor's up there with his friend. And the music's going. And everything is just going fantastic until the music stopped and the bride comes up. And Doug, the pastor, addresses her by the guy's first wife's name right in front of everybody. And you could, the air just went out of this room. I mean, everybody's just like, and I was about nine rows back. And, of course, his friend, the groom, leans forward and goes, "That was my first wife's name. This is my second wife," you know. And the pastor's face is so incredibly red. It was so awkward. The rest of the time was just terrible, you know. And the wedding's all over. And I knew where the pastors, there was like a little room downstairs where they would all go hang out after services and stuff. So I thought, I'm going to go down there and see if I can cheer him up, you know. So I went down there and I opened up the door. And as I opened it up, they were in there laughing, retelling the story. And the pastor that had made this big scoop was like, "You should have seen her face, man. I thought she was going to faint." And his face was so red. He goes, "If he wouldn't get married so many times, maybe I could remember her name." But they're laughing and just having this. They're just laughing. I was a young Christian. I didn't know what to make of it. I was like, I thought they'd be in there grieving. They thought it was the funniest thing ever. Now, here's my point. I don't know if it's okay to laugh at that or not, but here's the point I'm trying to make. They could still laugh. These were older guys that had been through a lot of heartbreak and misery and all kinds of things, and they could still find the humor in something. Don't let being a dad suck out the ability to laugh. You know, don't let parenting and earning money and living, don't let it rob you of just being able to sometimes just laugh and have a sense of humor about things. Because it's funny. You need it. Now the next one is, and it's a skill number four, and this is an important one for all the guys, pick the right action movie. Write that on your notes. Okay, I'm just playing. That's not in the Bible. But it is an important one, but that's not the promise we're going to do. So here's the real promise. Pick the right path. Pick the right path. I'm just playing with the other one. And I have these little compasses right here. These are little examples of what it means to pick the right path. How many times have I sat with someone and they say this to me, I just don't know how I got here. And I'm like, well, you got here because this destination was on the path that you chose. I told you guys earlier that we've been married 33 years, and in 33 years, I've never committed adultery. And it isn't because I'm stronger than the next guy. It isn't because I've been less tempted. It's not because I'm holier or more religious. It's because I've never got on the path that leads to adultery. I don't flirt with girls. I don't call girls on the phone. I don't text girls. I don't spend too much time with women. I don't go out to lunch or movies or anything like that. I keep boundaries with girls. Because I know if you get on the path, eventually there's a destination. And one of the skills you have to have is figuring that out. You know, get it, like the path you choose has destinations on it. This is what it says in the Bible. Carefully consider the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. The path is what matters. When someone says, I don't know how I got here, I always want to say, well, here was always on the path. The problem isn't here, the problem is the path that you chose. Sorry. And then the last one, number five, is grow from your mistakes. And I brought these little bags of Grow, Miracle Grow stuff, just as kind of an example of that. These college coaches were scouting these high school football players, and they're up in the stands watching these guys. And there's this one kid that just keeps getting knocked down by this other kid. But every time he gets knocked down, I mean, they'd be all these different tackling drills. Every time this kid gets knocked down on the ground, hard, knocked down, he bounced right back up on his feet. And they'd knock him down again. He bounced back up on his feet. Like 10, 11, 12 times, this kid just gets totally knocked down to the ground, bounces back up on his feet. And finally, the head coach says to the other guy, all right, I know the guy we want. And the assistant looks at me and goes, that guy that keeps bouncing up when he gets hit? And he says, no, I want the guy that's knocking him down. And I want to let you know something. You got to grow from your mistakes. You can't keep getting hit down, knocked down. In life, God wants to help you knock something down. Knock down your finances, your marriage, your parenting, your job. Be able to knock down the husband you want to be, the friend you want to be. Give you the ability to knock it down. Not just keep it knocked down, knocked down, knocked down, get up, knocked down. Knock someone else down in life. Here's what the Bible says. Did all your experience mean nothing at all? Surely it meant something. And put my cards out here a little bit. I'll show you what it looks like in my life. I don't like doing this, but I'm going to put it out there because maybe it'll be helpful. So a couple of months ago at work, I told an outright lie to my manager. We were working on a situation with a customer, and he came up and he asked me a direct question about a customer, and I looked him right in the eye and told him a direct lie. And I just lied right to him. And he didn't catch me. But it bothered me all night. And bothered me the next day. And I knew from experience See, I grew up in a home where it was very embarrassing to be in my neighborhood because of the different things that were going on in my house. It was natural for me to be dishonest about what went on in my home. So when I was really little, I learned to lie. That was like a way to survive. And I became an adult, and I just kept lying. And then I started following Jesus, and he was like, would you like to grow from that? And so here I'm at my house, and the next day I had to do what I had done many years before and learned to do. I had to go sit down with the manager and look him right in the eye and say, listen, yesterday I told you a lie. And I'm not talking about, I wish this was like 10 years ago, this was like 2 months ago. And we had to work it out. You know, I remember the first time that I started growing. I'd just become a Christ follower. And I was working in a restaurant, and they had this really expensive soup warmer, and the soup was getting a little cold, so I went over and I cranked it all the way up. And later in the night, I didn't realize that I turned it up so high, I burnt the pan and ruined it. I burnt this soup pot. I completely ruined it. Really expensive pan. And the owner of the restaurant was there that night, and he was walking around as we were cleaning the restaurant. Everybody's like, he was walking around with this pan to everybody. Did you turn that up and ruin this pan? He came right up to me. Are you the guy that turned it up and ruined the pan? I looked right at him and said, no, it wasn't me. And that was like the first time I saw it. I got knocked down. And I was like, I don't want to be like this anymore. I want to be the person that isn't like this. So I went to God. And I came back the next day to him. It was the first time ever. And I went to him and I said, listen, it was me that burned the soup pan. And I went through the process of embarrassment and we worked it out. And it changed who I was. I hardly ever tell lies now. I'm the guy knocking people down. It's very rare that I do. And if I do, I know how to respond to it. What area do you want to grow in your life? What do you want to see different? What skill do you need to develop to where things would change for you? Look in your outline, the bottom line, God has promised to help us finish. And so I'm sure that God, who began this good work in you, will carry it on until it's finished, until the day of Christ Jesus.